taken the exact same source code through multiple validations at the same time and had very different receptions. Because each submission gets its own reviewer, the own person working in the bureaucracy. And because the scripture, the formal requirements that the CMVP can't change, they don't even have the liberty to change it. Those are so old and so disconnected from modern reality that a great deal of intellectual gymnastics are required to reconcile. And that's done in so many subjective ways. So you literally going into the process to get a validation, really it's a crapshoot. How long it will take, what issues you'll run into, what guidance you'll get, what you'll have to change. And we have literally taken the same code, essentially the same documentation, through parallel tracks and gotten very different results. That is the most frustrating thing about it at all. The fact that some of the requirements are completely silly is much less disturbing to me than the fact that they move around so much.
So Steve, what would you change? What would be your top of the item other than fix everything so it's consistent?
No, I don't care. I care less about what the consistent rules are than that they be consistent.
Uh-huh.
Silly is okay. It's less of a problem than both silly and...
It doesn't make sense.
You have to get past that pretty quickly.
Remove entropy out of the program?
You're talking about the...
The entropy out of the process.
As opposed to requirements on how entropy is done.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So David, of course, your viewpoint is entirely contrasting, having had such a smooth sail through the process.
Platform that's available in Java, which thousands of people are using, Tomcat and various other applications. So anything or something in the stance a bit. But certainly in the .NET realm and also in the Java realm, where what you've got is these situations, it's not just the TLS side of it, it's supposed to, you have these situations where people have defined these protocols and they recognize these issues with particular algorithms. So it's been incorporated into the algorithm, you know, set of calculations and things like initialization vectors and that are prepared accordingly. Because it's kind of built into the protocol layer, it's very hard to bury it back down into a module. You can't do the clean one. And in fact, in some ways you shouldn't do it, because if there's an adjustment to the protocol, then suddenly, you know, you have to change the module to deal with it. It's just ended up in a very odd place. And GCM actually with TLS, it's good to be able to use it. I mean, there's a lot of applications that would benefit from in the Java realm.
I mean, among cryptography engineers, it's not even like a secret. FIPS isn't modern cryptography. It's not modern cryptography. It's not agile. It's almost legacy to the point where, you know, in terms of implementation, I don't know how to make. I fully understand the motivations behind wanting to have some independence of correctness of implementation. It makes perfect sense. Swamp of snake oil that's out there, but the cadence is just not fast enough. It just doesn't make sense, and so I think that's much more of an institutional and a process thing than any kind of technical issues. But I don't even know what you do. I don't think you could do like a salt FIPS. I mean, it's Polly and Cha Cha even.
I mean, that's not even on the approved list, right?
You can't do. You can't validate.
Right. So you're suggesting, Ken, that if only the implementation guidance release cadence was increased, it would be more agile?
What I'm saying is that
yes.
What I'm saying is there's a desperate need to sort of accept this state of the field right now, and that's not reflected in people who are working in good faith to get their implementations validated. It's expensive, it's burdensome. This isn't news, but it's getting to the point that it's painfully almost legacy validation for lots of FIPS implementations, and that's a problem.
So there's an interesting dichotomy between what you said and what Steve said, in that you're saying that it's too prescriptive, and you're saying that it's arbitrarily implemented, it's both overly prescriptive and underinterpreted?
We aren't disagreeing.
Okay.
I'm looking at it from a slightly different angle. Okay. One fact of the matter is, if you're a software implementer, you're a vendor, and you're implementing a product, and security is your first priority, you do not use a FIPS validated module. FIPS validated code inherently, because of the nature of the process, is going to be less secure, worse performance, everything. You only use FIPS 140 in environments where you must do so, and where adherence to that mandatory policy is more important than real world security. In that context, the fact that you are, you know, technical considerations of what is good or bad are secondary. All right, it's the tail that wags the dog. The FIPS 140 tail wags the crypto dog.
Yeah.
And so our objective is, if you want good cryptography, use OpenSSL without FIPS. If you must use FIPS, well, use OpenSSL and use the FIPS module. And so my goal is to get you that validated FIPS module with all the inherent technical limitations that are unavoidable. And yes, it's technically inferior to OpenSSL without FIPS. So all I'm asking is, let us get that validated, at least have that be a predictable, consistent process. And the silly restrictions are okay, because if you don't like the silly restrictions, just don't use it.
Yeah. So, and it's a classic balance between regulators, right? If you give project officers flexibility of discretion, then you get varying interpretations. But I guess one of the things I'm saying is, to the extent things are prescriptive, we should be allowing crypto that's now
years of, you know, solid peer review research behind it, and that's there's a whole world of market power that just, you know,
well,
it's not there.
This is a very bureaucratic process. So you have this fundamental scripture that the bureaucracy that does FIPS validations, the CMVP, can't change it. You know, they have to adhere to it. So you know, you have the three canonical pieces. You know, you got the DTRs, implementation guidance, and FIPS 140 itself, and that's the scripture. Now they have on top of this thing called implementation guidance, which is basically a backdoor way to try to change the scripture. Contorted as any such process must be. I mean, they are very much constrained bureaucratically in what they're able to do. So what you're asking for, which is to recognize the reality of, you know, modern computing, cryptographic and computing technology, they're bureaucratically prescribed from doing.
Do we have anybody from NIST in the room?
I don't know, but I have a question related to Steve's earlier comment. Hi, Steve. Josh Brickman, Oracle. You just said that running your applications in FIPS mode is less secure, and there might be some people in the room who might object to that. Could you expound a little bit more on that, please?
Well,
it would be interesting to know how many people in the room believe FIPS is a FIPS 140-2 validated module is fundamentally more secure. So I'm going to take your assertion and test it in a public forum.
I'd actually say that there is an extent to which a module that has got itself through the FIPS process probably has some better security processes, but I would run it in a non-FIPS mode. And I would also put the caveat that I would not necessarily want to run a FIPS validated version of a code that had been through that process because it will be lagging. And you know, I've known people who've refused to apply critical security patches because it involved moving to a non-FIPS validated version of the code. So there's clearly some exceptionally broken incentives in the use of FIPS. On the other hand, I think that there are aspects to the CMVP which have some benefit in terms of getting people to adopt some certain processes. And that's probably why it hasn't been taken out behind the building and shot, because which is what we all know really ought to happen. I'd love to know if there's anybody in this room who thinks that they're safer if they run FIPS modules in FIPS mode. I'd love to have a photograph of that to give to the folks at NIST.
And seriously, if anybody has an opinion to the counter and simply is not comfortable speaking up, do grab one of the panelists or myself afterwards, because we don't want to go away with the impression that everybody had that viewpoint if, in fact, you just didn't want to publicly put your hand up.
So I think the effect of FIPS here is somewhat to reduce the variance, while perhaps in a Simpson's paradox sort of way, either increasing or decreasing the mean. So I would rather run OpenSSL in non-FIPS mode than in FIPS mode. But if you tell me you're going to pick some crypto out of a random GitHub repository and make me use it, then I would rather the sample population be FIPS validated implementations than be the general population of random things on GitHub.
And I would actually disagree with that. Have you actually ever looked at parallel examples of FIPS code under the hood, FIPS validated code?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
You expressed a common sentiment. Mm-hmm. Which is, gosh, it's been through this validation process, it must be better. And the point I'm making is, no, necessarily it has to be worse. Because the process, everything is subordinated to the validation process. Hmm. And so you necessarily have to sacrifice code.
I'm saying that things are made worse by being forced through the validation process. Mm-hmm. But that you at least need to meet some bar to begin with in order to survive the validation process.
Actually, you don't. Not in terms of real world resistance to real world quality, and by real world security. By that I mean resistance to malicious or accidental vulnerability or subversion. For example, OpenSSL has been through many validations, both by us and by other vendors cloning it. And none of the validations, that dozens of them that I've worked with, have ever turned up any defects in any OpenSSL code. The one exception being some code we wrote just for the FIPS module.
But I'm not going to slip rot 13
through FIPS. Surely, by your metric, that means that we shouldn't use OpenSSL. We should pull something at random from GitHub, because you just said that was going to be, on average, better.
The point I'm making is that the quality of the code is the nature of the review process at FIPS 140 pays for level one. Pays absolutely no attention to code quality. In fact, we accidentally validated a cryptographic algorithm that's totally broken, couldn't be used. Dual EC DRBG, if anyone remembers that. And it turns out that our implementation that was completely, many times was validated, turned out to be totally broken and unusable. And the validation process didn't pick that up. It is completely disconnected from a software engineer's idea of software review.
I just want to say that dual ECC RBG is secure within the model that it was designed in.
It turned out to be secure for us because it was unusable. which was an
touche there, Nico.
Well, that's and Steve Henson, my colleague who was responsible for that bug, said it was the only time in his entire life he'd ever been happy to have
broken them.
Yeah, to have been responsible for a software bug.
So we've got about 5 or 6 minutes to go. So keep bringing the questions on. Hopefully this is being entertaining. Go ahead, John.
I'm going to plug my ears about less secure in FIPS mode, but I think there is value to it. As a product vendor with a bunch of developers that don't know anything about crypto, forcing them to put the library in FIPS mode is actually tremendously valuable, because if you don't, they'll turn on SSL3 and they'll turn on just crap, and then it's on some non-standard port, and some customer finds it in a vulnerability scan and says, what are you doing? So there is some value in stopping sort of really egregious mistakes.
But I believe the program doesn't require technical enforcement of algorithm usage. It can be done procedurally in the security policy. So what you're reflecting is those people who've gone through FIPS, who've implemented technical enforcement, do actually have a positive security outcome, which tends to contradict Steve's point. We found a possible security benefit of FIPS.
Yeah, we've seen places where we just say the coding standard for the product is when you call OpenSSL, the first thing you do is turn on FIPS mode. And we've had people say, well, my module crashed. Well, it was supposed to crash when you tried to do something stupid. Or we've had things like the module's hanging on boot up. Oh, because we called from dev random for an entropy source, and it actually did what it was supposed to do and didn't serve any out. So there is some benefit to these things with products and developers that aren't crypto specialists.
Yeah, the risk of getting myself into trouble because I'm up here. Yeah, I'd probably agree with that.
So I did promise we'd get varying viewpoints. I think we're delivering here. Yeah, what I definitely say with the FIPS stuff, if your users are expecting things to happen fast,
And I can cite an example. There was a fascinating paper at Eurocrypt a few years ago about the certificates extracted from the database belonging to the Taiwanese Ministry of the Interior, turning out to have a bunch of keys generated for client smart cards. The first 1 million client smart cards had come from a nice reputable German smart card manufacturer who actually tested what came out of their random number generator continuously. And then they switched to a cheap manufacturer of smart cards for the next few million cards that were issued, which turned out not to do a FIPS-style RNG test when live. And one of the, not only did we factor, how many did we factor? A few hundred, I think, in the end, of the RSA keys that were being used, but we actually found that one of the primes being used in many of these keys was the next prime larger than 2^5, 11, because the random number generator was producing series of zeros, and they'd set top and bottom bit and then search for next prime. And so, you know, if you have things like live testing of the strength of the output from your RNG, it is actually a useful thing. Whether we actually need FIPS validation in order to achieve that, or whether we just need sensible engineering, is another question. Here's one of the authors of the paper.
We have 1 minute to go.
Okay. Just one amusing detail with it. I mean, the card was FIPS certified. I mean, the cheap replacement card has gone through FIPS testing, and the cheap replacement card had gone through common criteria testing. There were some small comments about it that maybe if you don't use the whitening afterwards, that it wouldn't be so good, but it totally passed the certification. It got a ka-chunk from here and a ka-chunk from there. So both the German BSI and the American FIPS had given a certificate for it. Well, US Canadian FIPS and German BSI.
Not a problem. So I think we've actually had some fun. I've certainly found it entertaining. I think we should all join together and thank the panelists for expressing their frank opinions. And I feel kind of pleased that we got to the second set of general questions out of 12, and that to me means it's a successful panel.